Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Welcome to Tech Lounge with me, Christian Jar, on the road on my little travel mic and getting a very slight cold. So you may hear a little bit of background noise and some mess in my voice. But this episode is one I've had sat on the backlog for a little while. I'll be honest, I have a few interviews I've somewhat forgotten about. And then I go back through the backlog and discover, oh, I should get those out. And this is one of about four over the next few weeks that is from that bucket of lost that I somehow absentmindedly forgot about. But this one is an interesting one. It's a little bit technical, which is great for the Tech Lounge audience. And it is with Roman. I think my French brain is not quite locked in today. From Motion Spell, a company that helps a lot with video streaming, transcoding, and packaging, and is also one of the main maintainers behind GPAC, which is an open source component that does the same. And actually, the technology lies behind many video platforms and video streaming sites that you may use, including Netflix. So it's one of these sort of open source tools that you may never have heard of, but you have probably used without realizing. So enjoy. If you are looking for a simple option to replace the internal screenshot tool in macOS, then look no further than Simple Screenshot. It features numerous customization tools for screenshots, easy access to those customizations and screenshot types, as well as output, format, location for the screenshots, and many other features. Besides, if you are interested in getting a copy for a reduced rate and throwing the show a few cents, then head on over to go.christianchiller.com/simple-screenshot. I have a couple of French friends here who've been to Guadeloupe recently as well. They brought back some amazing rum that seemed to last them forever.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. You don't have all the French good culinary stuff, but you have rum, right?
I used to be more into rum. I'm more into whiskey these days. All right. So it's kind of a lot to unpack here. Maybe let's just very quickly start with who you are and who you represent, and then we'll dig into some of those areas. I think there's quite a bit a lot of piles we can go down, but let's start with the basics.
Okay, so my name is Romain Boucaud. I'm a developer. Mm-hmm. I'm mostly known for being an open source developer on the GPAC open source project. GPAC is a multimedia framework. It's an open source project that's been around for 20 years with what I believe is a singular history. It's about MPEG-4, yeah. And MPEG-4 was a set of standards that was like the open standard competitor to Flash. Yeah. So something around interactivity and more than just a 2D TV screen, let's say. So GPAC is born in this. It used to be a startup in New York City, nearly 2000 in year 2000, and then there was this big .com bubble burst. And then the founder, who was French, came back to France, and it was open source within a university. And we just gathered a collection of users that came from these, startups, standardization, academic people, video enthusiasts that were, trying to, grab some video, replay their video, processing the videos and, getting the newest possible standards. And then some of these people also made new companies like, YouTube and all other companies. We're receiving messages on the GPAC open source project from people from, all kind of companies. And 12 years ago, I decided to build a business around the commercialization of GPAC because we had so much expertise and doing so many things. And we were seeing so many companies building stuff around GPAC and being primarily based around some university to do some business. It was not a good structure.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think the high point for us was when Netflix accepted to do a press release with us, explaining that we were doing all the packaging for them. So that was for their distribution content, but also on the production side, and also on everything that is related to journalist preview for the content. So I think that was pretty big for people because there are so many projects like us. We're not a small project. We are not a big project. We are a middle-sized project that's been around for 20 years with a quite sane community of people who, you know each other. That's how you want to do things, right? When you're in a big community, of course, there are some, you know, clashes that happen from time to time. This is not the case for us. But so this is a good side. And the bad side is that when you're doing open source at this scale, it's a bit sometimes difficult to make it sustainable and to have, you know, to show to people that they can trust you and that you have a size and a legitimacy that, you know, would make them choose you over maybe some bigger projects that have their own problems. But, you know.
Yeah. Let's just quickly, there's a bunch of terms that you've mentioned and that are sort of related to this that especially people in open source, especially people in Linux world have possibly heard of, but maybe people aren't completely sure what they are. So you've mentioned GPAC, you mentioned MPEG. I think also on your press release there was GStreamer. What are these things and how do they interact with each other to provide what they provide?
Okay, so MPEG is an ISO organization, and ISO makes standards. So that's international standards. And MPEG is, let's say, a group, because it's been changing. It's a bit complex, I would say, in the structure. But that's a group of people around motion pictures. Yeah. And they're creating standards. Yeah. That can be compression standards. Yeah. That can be coding standards. How do you code text, audio, video, metadata? How scene? So relating one with the other. When we are using a web browser, for example, it's a hypermedia. Yep. You're using, you know, different types of media and you links one to the other to create this interactive experience. So that's what MPEG creates. And then there are people implementing this standard. So GPAC is one of them.
Yep.
So we implement the MPEG 4 standards. This is where we started.
Yep.
And then we've extended, because we're super active also on standardization, we have a lot of R&D going on, and thanks to the academic activity that we also have. So we're pretty active, and we extended to MPEG-H and, you know, other standards that, you know, the people in the industry actually rely on. GStreamer is also an open source project. So GPAC and GStreamer are programs, basically, that are coded by people and that other people can actually look at, modify, reuse for free. So there is a set of freedom. So that's the license. And you need to abide by the license. But aside from that, you can do, you're pretty not restricted in a way. You know, can watch what's being done, replicate it, modify it, distribute it. So that's a set of freedom that you give to the others.
And a lot of these things are bringing back memories. I mean, I do a lot of video encoding, but I mostly stick to familiar things these days, but I remember it from university, especially MPEG. Like MPEG, I can't even remember what was popular then. I assume 4 was around then.
Was it audio or video?
MP4.
You were using MP4.
I definitely remember MP3, of course, and actually the creator of that lives not far from here. He's been doing a lot of talks around Berlin tech events recently, actually. They actually told me how much is the... It's the Fraunhofer Institute. How much money they made out of royalties was quite astounding.
That's a difficult business. Innovation basically is a difficult business. There are two paths. There is the one that is you have people who are passionate and, you know, who make things progress. And there are some open standards in the sense that not only the text is open, but also it's royalty-free because they're trying to avoid a kind of patent.
Yeah.
But when it comes to companies creating new codecs, like the Fraunhofer Institutes, they make creations, they patent it, and then to use the codec, you have these, what they call these patent pools, because they are not alone to do it. So all the companies have a legal entity that deals with the royalties, so they need to find a way to sell it, that is. So they have constraints. It needs to be fair, to license the technology, but at the same time, they need to make money, because I don't know, I heard the number that to develop the latest video codecs, it was hundreds of millions that were invested in research to have the progress. So that's the expectations also that they get when they create this technology. And at the same time, you have the Alliance for Open Media. They have a codec that is known to be royalty-free, V1, and there is Opus also on the audio.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's supposed to create a counterbalance because there is a real problem to find the right business model on this. It's super important to progress.
Just on that, though, because I look at the features page for GPEC. What does GPEC stand for, by the way?
It stands for, the G stands for GPEC. It's a
GNU type project
for advanced content.
Okay, so you mentioned some of the codecs you support, and most of them are ones people would recognize, but I don't think all of them are not open standards in themselves, are they? So how do you handle, as an open source project, how do you work with proprietary codecs just from a licensing perspective? I'm sort of interested to know how that works. Or is there a special dispensation for open source projects?
Sort of. When you distribute the source code, they consider it's okay.
Okay.
So the problem is it's mostly the case with the copyright laws and these open source licenses. The moment you distribute the software to someone, or the moment they execute it in binary form, is actually the moment where you need to get the rights. And that's why it's so complex. You need to have exemptions for some use cases, like personal use cases or use cases only on the web, or you make people pay for distributing content or encoding content or playing back the content or only for chips. There are so many possibilities, and actually there is a chain of value in the industry that is a bit complex, and it's been consolidating. So it's not so obvious exactly who would put the money where at the moment. I'm going to give you an example. Until recently, people thought that you would need to have some hardware acceleration on your end device for a codec to be successful. Because otherwise you would play like 1 hour or 2 hours of content on your smartphone, and then the battery would be drained and it would be impossible for you to play. So then they relied on the chips, and the problem is that you don't have infinite space on the chips either. So when, you know, several groups, entities, companies create new codecs, and you're a chip maker, you need to decide which codec you're going to support by hardware. And that was a kind of, you know, single point of negotiation between, you know, which codec had the most chances to deploy, and, you know, depending on the financial conditions and the complexity of the codec, so the area that it would take on chip, etc., you would have to take quite difficult decisions. And quite recently, an engineer at Meta that I got to know when he was at Netflix made some consumption measurements on a really highly optimized decoder that was made by open source fellows at Videoland that people know for the X264 codec and the VLC media player. 6 billion downloads, super popular and successful.
I was at FOSDEMI in Brussels this weekend, and you see all the people with the VLAN hats.
absolutely. Yeah, they're really active. And this is the kind of people that are not into the patent stuff. They are into the open stuff. And it's great to have these communities. Yeah. What I wanted to say is, they just discovered that if you have a highly optimized implementation, software implementation on a CPU, actually the battery drain was not so much of a problem because the codec decoding itself was just a tiny proportion compared to keeping your display on and this type of thing. So basically you could play for hours and, you know, between playing 15 hours with a hardware accelerated implementation or just like, I don't know, 9 hours with the software implementation, people were pretty okay. So that just, you know, when you do this, it just disrupts the chain of value and what, you know, how fast codecs can deploy. And so the value now is not to have the hardware implementation and make it, which is already rigid, because if you have a bug in the hardware implementation, there are so many conformance checks that you need to do. When it's software, you can deploy, you can update, and then you can deploy it super fast. So it changes completely the way of seeing the codecs. So we're in a highly changing environment, both technically and both on the business value, where during COVID, so many people and so many platforms just launched with prices that were super low, like the Disney streaming or Disney Plus offer was like, what was it, $2 or $3 a month? And there was this moment where everybody was at home and all the possible, you know, potential customers for them were accessible, and they just put the prices so low, saying, you know, if we don't grab the users now, possibly, you know, the other people aren't, you know, customers for us.
Yeah.
And then after that, there was this phase of consolidation where the content has a cost, the platform has a cost, and they needed to raise the prices, and there are so many competitors. I just read an article this morning that I wanted to relay on LinkedIn, where on Hacker News, which is a kind of forum for, you know, hackers, not only hackers in a broader term, where people were complaining about all the platforms but Netflix. And they were like creating three tiers of platforms. Yeah. It was Netflix, Netflix and YouTube. It were the other platforms, Max Plus, Prime Video. And there were all the other platforms that had so many problems for them, like that basically, you know, people were reluctant even to subscribe.
This is actually one of the interesting things to talk about when we sort of talk about implementation of standards like this. You know, I think I read a statistic somewhere about a ridiculous percentage of internet traffic is streaming, and of that, Netflix, they're almost taking up a significant percentage of the internet bandwidth, as it were. But yeah, you're right. Netflix is fairly well renowned for handling graceful degradation of streaming quite well. You know, if you're on a really poor connection up to an excellent connection, it generally works to a point, whereas some other ones, you get more timeouts, et cetera, et cetera. And there's always been various ways to implement this. And I pick on Netflix, not just because they're very well known, but also the logo is on the GPAC website. So I'm sure they don't tell you the complete process because that's kind of their industrial magic. But how does someone take the GPAC, I don't know, plugin, headers, whatever it is, and framework, that's what it says, and implement it? Like, what do they have to do in their application? What's the general process that everyone does? And then what's that magic bit that people add on top?
So I guess it's big open source makes it easier.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And that's even a problem for us because we're not spying the user in any way. You don't need to register.
Yeah.
You're using from the command line, and we don't have, you know, default telemetry.
Yeah.
Like, there's no telemetry at all.
Yeah.
So we're not sending, we're not getting, it's not even trying to self-update so that it sends, you know, a request. Some open source projects do that. They send a request for seeing if there are some updates. And thanks to that, they send a user agent and some information so they know where people are located, which devices.
Yeah.
We don't do that at all. So that's kind of a problem. We have analytics on the website, and that's all we know. So it's fairly easy for people to test it. I would say there are two types of people using a software like GPAC. They are like power users and developers.
Yeah.
They use it on their own or they use it for their own company. And so they are prescribing GPAC for their use. Either they're part of a community or a company. And so when they need to do something, you know, they look for their video problem on Google and, you know, they go to the website, they try to see if it works for them. We have a WebAssembly now version that you can go to. And so it's install less. So that's less friction for people, right? We are doing everything we can so that they can test and see if it fits for their need. And another type of users that we have is actually big companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have these references like Netflix, there are top managers that say, you know, we should evaluate this. And so they come. And so what is interesting is that past a certain point, people want to do things, but they need experts.
Mm.
That's the truth. They need really, most of the time, they you know, companies, they start with something. You have a need, you start usually with the leader somewhere that you find on your problem. And then they decide to go with something more customized. You build customization around it. And then they discover that maintaining your own implementation is way more expensive than using some open source. And at the same time, they realize that sometimes they just need some help.
Yeah.
There is a real talent retention problem. You cannot keep people for 20 years in a company because people want to see other things. It's also a new generation stuff where, you know, they start in a business, in an industry, and they don't know if they will like it or not. And after a couple of years, they say, hey, I prefer to do AI, or I prefer to do video games, or I prefer to do blockchain, or I want to take a sabbatical. And it's like for companies, there is a kind of difficulty to keep up with the knowledge. And that's why I was talking a couple of minutes ago with these open source projects being done by teenagers in their cave, basically. So I'm not a teenager in my cave. I used to like 20 years ago. But now we are older and I build this company just to make it sustainable economically, like, you know, everybody can live out of their art. But basically for me, there is a kind of clash of cultures between people who are employees in their companies. And even if they like what they do, basically they have their own constraints and they are employees. And the people who are passionate, you have some of them in companies, you have some of them in open source communities, etc. In many communities, I've seen lively communities in many areas, in music, in videos, in archiving, and people really passionate and, you know, they embody the cause they're serving. It's, you know, what they want to do. And these people make it move forward. And for me, there is a kind of real competition between both. And what I'm trying to do also with my company, and GPAC is moving this forward. GPAC is interesting because it comes from R&D. There is so much R&D. We are pushing the technology forward. And the company I build on the top of it tries to reconciliate these passionate people and the companies. And we're trying to move hand to hand. It's been pretty successful, but it's not, you know, I have the same constraints as the companies and the communities at the same time. So trying to create a synergy.
We should come to that because we haven't really mentioned it so far. And yeah, I mean, when we look at GPAC logos, we see Netflix, Genius Sports, who I think I vaguely recognize. And then at the bottom is Motion Spell, which is your company. So what is Motion Spell doing? You know, there's a couple of models that people can take to make open source commercially viable for them and for the people around them. So what is Motion Spell doing?
So we're mostly doing professional services. Okay. We're also the exclusive licensor of GPAC, which means that GPAC is open source, but we control the IP so that we can provide commercial licenses to companies.
Yeah.
So that's what I said. You need to reconcile the part that is totally open and the part that is commercial and proprietary. I think most people who have a daily job are creating proprietary stuff.
Yeah.
They're aware that there is open source. And on the other side, I guess that people who aren't part of an open source community have some idealistic view on what it is. And you said you went to...
FOSDEM it's full of a lot of people from the more idealistic space, but it's more and more people in industry as well. I interviewed a few people from, you know, fairly well-known open source companies that make it work somehow. It's actually interesting, though, you mentioned kind of licensing as an option because it's something that is not possible to every project. I don't know, someone making a programming language, I suppose you could license it, but it's not really the model that's normally used. Whereas oddly, things in the kind of like audio video world, we're sort of more used to it being licensed. It's kind of an interesting difference in the way that your part of the business operates.
For me, the limit, I don't want to restrain the creativity of the people using it. So for me, it is open source, and even the GNU licenses are the ones that are super important.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Because I want to work, I want to make sure that people will be able to use it, to copy, to modify it as much as they want. And even if I go away, even if Motion Spell goes away, even if all the GPAC contributors goes away, I want to make sure people can continue, you know, using it and experimenting with it.
Yeah.
Because I hope that the project will outlive what we do. But then I have a problem with the companies using it extensively and not contributing back. Mm-hmm. That's what they call the free rider problem.
Do they still have to license? They still have to license or not, though, in that case?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
But most of the time, because of some legal complexity, it's just easier to have a proprietary license instead of... And also, that's what I said. These companies, they just need expertise.
Mm.
As big as they are, they need someone to train them. They need someone to educate them. Sometimes you just need to offload also the maintenance of this.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix, before they used GPAC, they had their own implementation. And it's just maintaining the stuff with the cost of a Silicon Valley company.
Yeah.
It was just too high.
And a lot of I think a lot of these companies were using business values. Completely proprietary. I think some of these old services used to use something like Microsoft Silverlight, you know, and all of these are also, if the company decided to shut them down, then that's it. Whereas at least with open source, and if Motion Spell went away, someone can fork the project and carry on, you know. It sort of does give more options in the long run. That's always the beauty of open source, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think that's the situation of open source has dramatically improved in the last decade.
Yeah, there's been mixed opinions on some of the licensing changes and things in recent years, but yeah, we come back to the conversation of open source idealism versus paying people's wages. And I think there's different ways to do it, I guess. This is getting into a much broader topic of conversation. But yeah.
If I may, maybe to explain to people, because I'm pretty present for my business on LinkedIn, there's been more politicized debate,
yes,
I would say.
Yes.
And I think what people, I think that we both live in democracy. We're lucky for this. And I think there are two pillars that, you know, made this democracy strive for the last decade. Mm. It's the freedom and the economy, like the money. And there's a good balance to be found between what you do with your freedom and what you do with the money. And it seems to collude, like it's the freedom of choice. It's really funny because my father told me something one day and I had a good laugh and we were making fun of him. He said, you can only buy what they sell to you. And this illusion of choice where you can only, it's not a moral stuff where you have to, you know, freedom doesn't, it's, I don't want to go too much into philosophy, but freedom was like making good use of your own resources. Yeah. And now freedom is, I have the choice between different products. And I think we really need to reflect about what it is. And when it comes to open source is not a communist stuff that's being done by idealist people who don't want you to pay. It's just it's really the contrary. It's the real libertarian, most chaotic approach that you can see. Someone has a problem and decide to solve it by himself and put it on a website. Yeah. And whomever wants to follow, do it. And it's a fierce competition, actually, between, you know, people inside a project, between projects. It's really not what people imagine. And to keep it sane, you need to create a sane and sustainable environment with friendly people, giving people the freedom to do what they love because that's where what they are the best at, and at the same time having a sustainable life so that it's not a problem to say, you know, you remember all these security problems we had by, yep, you know, OpenSSL. Yep. Yep. Maintained by a guy for 20 years who had a daily job.
And also, like,
not even
Curl is the same. It's one guy in Sweden, I think.
But Curl is an example of project where they accept contributions only from three people in the world.
Yeah.
It's like they are open, but they are closed. You know, they do whatever they want. And if you're not happy, as you said, you fork it. If you think you can do better.
There's WEA.
They are experts. They are so much experts in their stuff.
Yeah.
You prefer actually to hire these people and, you know, keep them maintain their stuff as they do and propose it to the general public.
Yeah. Now, very, very quickly, just to wrap up. So if we look down some of the, it's interesting, we look down some of the companies for Motion Spell, I'm assuming, considering it's relatively small, you have Netflix, Instagram, Akamai, bits of AWS, Fox, I'm assuming, as in Fox
now,
TV
now,
people.
Now it's Disney.
Cisco, yeah, it's ARD, it's which I definitely recognize from here. It's the German public broadcasting network. You know, there's a lot of fairly big names there. So I'm assuming that's keeping you fairly busy. What is, you know, I think especially in this kind of world where you have new things to handle, new things to introduce, but also a lot of people being very reliant on uninterrupted service. What is next for Motion Spell and for GPEC in the next sort of 6 months or so?
So I think there are two ways for us to kind of extend. As you mentioned, we already have big names.
Yeah.
So people, it's big and small customers. You see the logos on the website and you don't know if they bought actually a small training, a bunch of support. If they have a really big license, they operated us. So some of them communicated publicly, which is really nice of them. Recently, German broadcasters like WDR communicating on accessibility and subtitling live insertion that we made for them. That was the case for some OTT platform where we built the whole transcoding solution. And what's next? What's next is continuing to impose open source as a viable option for these people. Which is, you know, if you have a talent shortage, you have 50 companies or even 10 companies or even 5 companies competing, you could just, you know, bet on some open source project and just trust the open source project. The question is, where is the core of your business? For Netflix, definitely the packaging was not the differentiator. The differentiator is the content for these platforms.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just opened it. They said, hey, we use GPack open source. We open source. We ask them to open source immediately everything we do. So everything they do for us is actually open source. Hmm. We're not competing on this. You know, that's the rest. That's how we distribute content. That's the content itself. That's other things. I think the companies need to really wonder and stop putting some talents on some things that are already being processed. The talent can join us. They can propose to, you know, to give us some resources to contribute to a project like GPack. I think they can do that. And otherwise, they can just buy us some services.
Yeah.
For me, that's where I would like to extend. And the other thing that you mentioned about open source, other open source projects, I have competitors, open source competitors that were created by big companies. And there is this difference between open source being handled by a community and open source being created by a company, and the day the fundings are cut, there is this problem. That's why I'm talking, I'm saying sustainable, sustainable, sustainable. We need to create communities where the things that are infrastructure, you know, people can rely on. They pay a fee for that. They can rely on, and there is a bunch of people taking care of this for them. And then they can focus on their job. So that's where I would like to extend. I would like us to be the infrastructure
for
some part of the video infrastructure for these companies.
And are there any major things on the roadmap for GPack? Like, I don't know, what's kind of the next trend that you think is coming in the sort of video audio streaming space that you need to handle or need to handle better?
You know, it's going to be counterintuitive because I think people would have bet on this a couple of years back, but everything that is more than 2D traditional TV is actually, for me, the way to go.
Okay. Yeah.
And of course, I have a DNA. I come from something that is, you know, deeply interactive.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why you mentioned Genius Sports, who is also a sponsor on the GPack side. This is a data sport company. They provide metadata around sports.
Yeah.
I think people want that. You know, it's great to have a face-to-face communication. But sometimes you're using a service and you see something that you would like to buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are fed up about advertising. It's like everybody bets on advertising. There is an ad-based tier on every platform these days. And actually, they make a lot of money on this.
Yeah.
But they could make so much more money just to have more focused advertising, more integrated. And that would allow them to do also less advertising.
Yeah.
Because I think, I don't know in Germany what is the level of tolerance. In France, it's pretty low compared to the US.
It's pretty similar.
But when you go to the US, I'm shocked looking at TV and shows by the number of advertising that people tolerate.
I've been to some sports games there, and it's like advertising with a sports game happening in the middle of it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
I think
there is a tolerance.
I think
what
you mean. It's been a complaint
but
an issue, for example, for commercial podcasts for some time, is that they have no real insight into anything, which is kind of the beauty of it, but also means you just end up with these very just like annoying ads that make nobody happy.
Absolutely, but that's the only way. Recently, we launched a service and actually we discovered that people were not ready even to give $1 or euro to use it, because they could have other ways that would cost them more than the price. But there is, you know, microtransactions are not so easy these days.
Yeah.
You need to give your credit card and go to a platform and have an account. People don't want that. It was so much easier actually to put some ads at the bottom of it. And when people got annoyed with the ads and they understood the value of the service, they were ready to pay even more. So it's a kind of win-win stuff.
Somewhat depressing, isn't it? Yeah. Advertising still seems to work the best. Yeah.
But I'm not against. I think, you know, companies that there are legitimate reasons for doing advertising. You want your podcast to be known by users. Yeah. And of course, there is the mouth words. But also, you can make some advertisement and say, hey, I have something, you know, I think it's super interesting. Yeah. And I would like more people to know about it. I would like to make some advertising on it. The problem is, who do you target?
Yeah.
And that's the problem nowadays. The format, when it happens, who it's targeted to. Most of the time, it's so annoying that people have ad blockers, and even Apple, they have ad blockers, and even, you know, ISPs put default ad blockers. And for me, the real problem, of course, I come from open source and I'm attached to freedom, is they're using it to track you.
Yeah.
That's a real problem. They track you even if you didn't put your consent. So we have GDPR in Europe. Even if you don't use the consent, when you look at the requests that are being done, any web browser make it easy. They have an inspector. You go to network, you load a page. Even if you don't put your content, you see, you know, the big advertiser, not to name it, like, and Google, and you see data going to their servers and other brokers. You didn't even consent to anything.
Yeah.
And they have all the information for you. There is a, I'm going to put a blog post on LinkedIn also about this, not mine, but relaying information. People need to be aware of this, that some other people are just using.
I think we're increasingly aware of it, I think. But yeah. I feel like
we can do better. You don't need to steal the information on the people. You don't need to be, you know, spying on people. There is so much money to do with it that actually some people, you know, would do it anyway. So I think that's where we need some regulation. I know a lot of people are against regulation, but if you don't regulate, this is what's happening, right? But at the same time, we're in an open world where there are some countries where the law is more difficult to enforce. So we know it's going to happen. It's just, it's not normal that big companies that, you know, are based in countries that try to, you know, have a lower system that is sound, allow this type of
thing.
My opinion. But that's the reason why people don't like advertising eventually. It's a mix of things that, you see the wrong stuff, they are spying you. Now there is this free TV that you can buy that has a second screen. Most of the TVs have webcams included. Yeah. It's like, you know, you don't know where you belong with this. You just want to buy a dumb screen. You know, you're ready to pay the price for it.
Not even available anymore.
Maybe even now.
All right, we covered quite a lot. So if people are interested in looking at the more programmer mind, it's gpack.io. And Motion Spell is at, I had the link open. Where did it go? I'm assuming motionspell.com. That was easy. Right, there we go. So, all right. That was quite fascinating. Thank you very much for joining me. So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Scheller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianscheller.com, or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianscheller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.